This is Sam Darmacena, and you're listening to CJRU 1280 AM. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative.
I think the energy focus always needs to be around what is a holistic way to support a young person. So in this case, if we're talking about education systems, just Youthline is also not enough, right? So how are actually educators and parents and administrators being supported to know how to support young people to create a fostering and like safe environment that youth aren't wondering who is my one ally or who's the one queer teacher that I can go to? So for us, it's like, I think that is the dream for education spaces. And as an agency, we just want to continue to be able to create more peer support spaces so that youth can actually create their own spaces and their more programs, because that's our work. As Youthline, our work is really to support young people to create the programs and to create the spaces that they want. And supporting their environments is a periphery need, because if youth are still fighting or struggling to be able to name something a gay straight alliance, then they're not really going to be able to thrive in that environment.
You were just listening to Brika Gupta, Executive Director of LGBT Youthline. We talk about their organization's work, how they're providing support amidst the pandemic, and the Do Better report, which will be released very soon in February.
So LGBT Youthline is a 2S LGBTQ youth-led organization. We do peer support and leadership opportunities for youth across Ontario. So for over 25 years, we have had a helpline, which for the last 10 years has also done chat and text support and phone support. And then we also do a lot of leadership programs across the province to just support youth feeling more empowered to make a difference in their communities.
I asked Brika why it's important at Youthline to engage youth in their work and in the process rather than simply delivering supports to youth.
We've always been a by and for youth organization, and we can always see the brilliance and the power that young people bring to tables. Especially when it comes to building solutions for young people, so often they're left off the table, or they're just like that one focus group. And then it's like, thanks for your info, we'll figure this out. When really, if we're looking for solutions that are for young people, who better to tell us what they need than the people who are experiencing this today? So our philosophy or our thought process has always been that youth should have the autonomy and the ability to say what they need, but also feel empowered and be heard when they're saying those things. So as an organization, if we can make it be more centralized and come together in a way where it can be taken more seriously, then that's really the role we're interested in playing.
LGBT Youthline has been in operation throughout the pandemic, but other organizations that were more location-based or centered around gatherings haven't been able to pivot in the same way. Brika tells me how all of those realities have shaped their last few months.
We became one of the only, if not one of the very few resources available that were still around. And so we've worked really hard to make sure that we had no service interruptions. And so our year has actually been, we used to work out of a service room in Central Toronto. And our process in the last 9 months is that we've become an entirely remote operation. So our volunteers and staff team have been fantastic at very quickly turning around our operations. So our chat and text has remained open. And we even had like past volunteers come back to keep up with the demand, especially over the summer. And as we move into this year, we're actually on track because our phone lines are not open for the last 9 months. So we've also been moving all of our phone service to a voice over IP so that in March we'll start taking phone calls again. So a lot of our work is really continuing to do that piece of we're the only anonymous service for queer and trans youth in this province. And so especially in a time when people are stuck at home and potentially in unsafe environments, we're one of the few safe spaces that they can access.
The pandemic has also impacted the nature of those conversations. In Youthline's annual report for 2019 to 2020, mental health and isolation were listed as top issues discussed by youth accessing the helpline. Brika tells me what those conversations sound like now that our society's relationship to isolation has fundamentally changed.
Isolation is not new to 2S LGBTQ youth, unfortunately, and mental health challenges related to isolation. So I would say that the pandemic has just exacerbated them and made them worse, because the few spaces that youth might have to, like, you know, slip out to a support group or an after school program, or, you know, just even the informal networks that youth often have to like hang out with have all kind of been like put on a hold or not possible. So a lot of the ways that youth are able to like feel a sense of community and feel a sense of connection has kind of been stripped. And this is for youth who even had that to begin with. So I would say that the pandemic has probably added an extra burden because folks are in a home situation, especially for younger youth who are at home or might not feel like they can live their full selves. It adds that additional burden then on top of the mental health challenges that we're all experiencing in a pandemic. They're also having to experience an additional challenge of like feeling like they have to suppress their identity or dating or relationships or even peer relationships being impacted.
Burka adds that much of these past few months have been spent creating the Do Better report. They gathered the research before the pandemic, and now it's almost time to release it.
So last year at this time, we launched a needs assessment report that has data from almost 1,200 young people across Ontario telling us what their needs and experiences are. And so that data set like helped us really understand like what are the things youth need locally, what are their key challenges. And it's also where we got data sets like how over one third of youth are saying that their mental health needs are not being met. And like over 50% of youth say that they don't feel a sense of community in their local region. So from that data, we were just like, this is so good. We want to do something next. And so the Do Better report is actually something we've been working on since like the late summer, because also COVID happened in that time. So we wanted to make sure it was accounting for the pandemic. And so we are in the works of launching this report in February that actually is going to have a full website and 7 action areas for different leaders in different parts of the province of things that they can do.
And like the rest of their work, this report is a by youth for youth endeavor.
So our entire research project has actually been a community-based model from the beginning. Like the youth came up with the questions. They actually mined the data with the support of a researcher. And so it's a more powerful process for us because we can clearly pinpoint what's important.
LGBT Youthline received a lot of media attention around January 12th for being removed from the Toronto Catholic District School Board's mental health resource page. In their January 12th statement, the board noted that the website was removed because there was online content deemed inappropriate for school-aged children available through third-party resources from Youthline's website.
There are people within the TCDSB and all school boards that are trying to fight for 2S LGBTQ youth. I think things are like moving slower than they need to sometimes, or there's like resistance. What happened over the last 2 weeks was a homophobic attack on our site. And we've seen similar attacks in different parts of the country where like this concept of age inappropriate content is being used as a way to pull LGBTQ resources off of places. And like, my hope is that people can start pushing back on these because this is another way that fear is being used to really like censor LGBTQ communities. Like this isn't just about our organization, but it's an issue of censorship or an issue of gatekeeping around like what is age appropriate content and the ways that queer trans Two-Spirit resources have always been jumping through these hoops.
Burka tells me that the board had emailed Youthline a couple days before their removal became public knowledge. And so they were still deciding their next steps when they realized that the community was already talking about it online, expressing their concern about Youthline's removal.
We actually weren't even sure if we would put out a public statement or what we would do with this information. But when we already started saw it on Twitter that morning, we're like, okay, we need to get in on the conversation because it obviously is about us. I wasn't surprised by the outpouring. Of course, it was way larger than I thought it would be, but I generally have found that when it comes to our work and thinking about 2S LGBTQ youth, I know that there's a really strong set of supporters in this province, in this city, that will show up. And actually what's nice about moments like this is that it brings them out more because sometimes there's like this assumption that we're doing okay or that an issue doesn't exist. And so a moment like this actually mobilizes people and makes them realize what a large gap there is. And actually movement is happening and people are pressuring for that movement to happen quicker.
By January 25th, the board had released a follow-up statement announcing that they had spoken to Youthline and their helpline would be reinstated to the website and that an LGBTQ+ resource page for students was being developed. At the end of the day, Burka hopes that this series of events and recent media attention can lead to something productive rather than being a fleeting moment of support, especially as they gear up for the release of the Do Better report. Burka tells me that these resource lists are a great tool for teachers and parents that want to offer support and direction for 2S LGBTQ students. So it's a shame when they're not available, And we also talk about the impact that these moments have on young people who are observing these school board decisions in real time.
The lack of resource or an addition of a resource really shows how an institution is thinking about their inclusion. So especially in a place like a Catholic school board where there's already been so much resistance in history and times around LGBTQ inclusion and the amount of like different ways that students and people within the system has have to fought for inclusion, like it just really brings up a lot of things for folks around not feeling like that the system or the school board cares about them, which might not actually be true.
The team at Youthline has looked at Catholic school boards across the province, and they know that the situation they've found themselves in recently is unfortunately not unique.
Because as much as we can focus on the TCDSB, the reality is that this has opened up a larger conversation, which is that 85% of Ontario Catholic schools list nothing around 2S LGBTQ resources. So this is a much larger structural issue.
Keep an eye out for LGBT Youthline's Do Better report, which will be available in February. And to support their work in meaningful ways, Burka shares some calls to action.
So many of us are actually connected to school systems, even public school systems, where we just need to do better around supporting 2S LGBTQ youth and making sure that they have access to resources and support. So that's the obvious one, which is figure out what's happening in your systems and push for it to be better, order our materials, make sure people know about services like ours. There's also a lot of great local movements in different parts of Ontario. And then relatedly, just continue to put pressure and be vocal, because even as advisory committees get set up, people within the system continue to need the support of parents and educators to put pressure on systems sometimes to move things quicker or to make sure that those bodies that are being created are actually useful, because an advisory committee can be completely useless and just a tokenistic checkmark, or it can be an extremely useful tool to move things forward pretty quickly. It depends on how it's done. And then the third piece we always say is we're a small organization and a lot of LGBT orgs are really small. So donations and committed ongoing donations really help us know that we have the monetary support to grow our staff teams and our resources to be able to take on more work like this.
This is Sam Darmacena, and you've been listening to CJRU 1280 AM. This story is part of the Local Journalism Initiative, a project by the Community Radio Fund of Canada.